feature presentation.
This weird aberration society.
I don't like that Ryan guy.
You hear me?
I can hear
now
you
now. Now we can, yeah.
Okay, so welcome back to Mutual Aberration Society. I'm Ryan Jackson, as always, and technical difficulties have arisen, but we have it.
Yeah, that's why he sounds like he's coming in from tin can, folks. Sorry.
We have it going now. So today, I'm going to be talking about the 1987 film, The Shinjuku Love Story. And I have on a pair of guests from the Marvelous podcast, Nicole and Stu.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
This is the moment where I allow you guys to introduce yourselves to the listeners. So tell everyone who you guys are and what Marvelous is.
You take a crack at this first, dude.
All righty. I'm Tyrell James, aka Discourse Stew, hypothetically a writer, podcaster with Nicole. We do Marvelous or The Death of Cinema, a podcast charting the decline of the modern Hollywood blockbuster as it becomes dominated by the Marvel Cinematic Universe and likewise kind of mega franchise IP, algorithmically generated gruel.
Pretty concise. And yeah, I'm his bimbo co-host, Nicole. I'm also a local, and by local I mean Boston area based film media writer, and I choose to do this podcast where I have to watch lukewarm IP crap and riff about it, except sometimes it's decent, most of it's not, but yeah, this is a nice break from what we usually have to do when we come on to record stuff, although we did do like Batman Returns, and that's genuinely a fantastic movie, but it's odd we get to really talk about things and have them be like, oh, this is a movie that kind of like no longer exists anymore. And I guess this is like a real hidden gem of a movie, because I couldn't even find any like real information about it anywhere, which is interesting. But yeah, so we're talking Shinjuku Love Story.
Well, that's a big reason why I started this podcast, is kind of in an odd way. And one of the reasons I kind of enjoy your guys' podcast, in an odd way, the Marvel Universe, my podcast is sort of a response to that, not necessarily directly, but sort of, because highlighting movies like this, right? Movies that sort of don't typically get talked about or even are really well known, especially here in the West. The big reason why I seek these movies out is because we live in a sort of homogenized post-Marvel world.
The smooth world.
Yes,
I think of it.
And it's you know, like, even though it wasn't like a direct, I'm always complaining about Marvel on this podcast. I do it a lot because they are the biggest like thing moving right now, or going, you know what I mean? So
yeah, it's like half the box office every year.
Right. And then they announce phases, like phase, I don't even know what phase they're on now. And it's like 60 slated movies. And it's like, it's just an assembly line of, you know, just Kevin Feige, you know, steered horseshit. So like, immediately, of course, I'm going to be attracted to a podcast that's sole.
Thank you.
Our modus operandi. Unless it's an episode where you gotta like, I mean, my thing is like, you know, the only reason I got into those movies is because Chris Evans is hot, and I stand by that. But Marvel movies, I made this tweet today, like the day of MCU movie wins like an acting, a major acting award, a major like production, like best picture or like writing award, that's going to be the absolute death of cinema. Just for me, at least. Like, but well, it remains to be seen.
It's already
which is funny because like the Oscars set up that like what was the audience category last year, and it ended up going, everyone was like, oh, this is clearly just so Spider-Man Far From Home, No Way Home can win an award, and it ended up going to the fucking Army of the Dead movie from Zack Snyder that was shit that they had to edit Tig Notaro into on a green screen. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'm of the thinking that like even the prestige movies now are sort of a response to the Marvel films in their own kind of weird way. Like I've gone on record to say like the past at least, I don't know, 10 years, like the majority of the films that you see that are prestige movies that get nominated for Oscars are also terrible. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not really good movies. What they have is the sheen,
yeah,
right? Like,
they're facsimiles of something else.
Yeah, everything's kind of desaturated, and everybody all stares at each other very serious and says, right, you know,
it's a carbon copy.
Yeah, it's like that movie Coda, which is basically, no one I know has actually saw it. It was an Apple Plus movie. It's not even
like who has Apple Plus? Oh wait, people who watch like Ted Lasso, which I'm convinced is like a psyop and this show doesn't actually exist. It's just like
right. And that movie is not even, they don't even have a physical, you can't even buy a physical copy of it at all. There's not even a boutique Blu-ray release. It's just
troubling.
And it's pretty much what we would have considered in the past a Hallmark movie. So that's what the sort of important cinema has been reduced to now in the era that we're in. So like, and I do blame Marvel for that.
Oh, they shoulder a lot of the responsibility, or at least by not just Marvel, but more specifically like the Walt Disney Company, Warner Brothers also holds just as much guilt. So, like, I think they announced they're going to completely phase out physical media releases, which is insane, which is why I think, like, you know, keep circulating the tapes. Physical media is very, very important. So folks, if you're a DVD Blu-ray hoarder like I am, keep going. You're doing us a favor.
Okay, so now that we've gotten the obligatory Marvel shitting on out of our system, I'm sure we'll come back to it.
Of course.
I will go ahead and do what I usually do, which is read the boilerplate, usually bad Letterboxd synopsis for these movies. Sometimes they're good though, so I can't really say, but you can never tell. So
like mine, I've never made a bad Letterboxd review, and that's the truth, right, Sue?
Right. Well, I don't read them. I just hit like and
oh fuck you.
Okay, so the Shinjuku love story of Shinjuku, our fugitive man that falls in love with an upper class daughter. Those are the actual words that are written.
She's not really upper class. We don't even see her home life. But she's just...
I'm sorry if I mispronounced this name. Ichi Joya is a street punk.
Namamuro? He goes by Namamuro.
Well, in this, again, this
is... But that's his, like, first name, guessing.
Yeah, because his name is literally on the back of his jacket, really. Did you notice?
Oh, yeah! No, I didn't realize that. Yeah. I thought that was, like, some designer.
Well...
Or something.
Fuamara, I'm going to call him, is a street punk who accidentally stumbles across Mary and her cat. Mary and Fuamara immediately fall in love, but they are chased both by the mafia and corrupt cops. See, this is what I'm seeing.
Wrong. Not the mafia, it's the Yakuza.
Yakuza. See what I mean by these letterbox plot?
That's a. I think that's also just like taken from the movie.
Yeah.
Page for it, as well as the IMDb page.
It's, like, it's which the tells only me how, description you'll find of that movie online, from what I could tell, in English.
There's not a lot about this movie when you search for it, which is very surprising for me. Well, again, it is a story about, you know, two young kids. Actually, one's a 20-year-old guy, and the other one's a 17-year-old girl in high school. Shout out to Japan for always doing that weird shit.
I mean, it was like the same with like something that actually it they're like, Stu, you described this kind of as a screwball comedy when I saw your review on Letterboxd. But like, I was thinking, you know, it helps, especially because Mari has like the cat Choco or Chaco, depending on the subtitle at the time. But like, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like Sailor Moon, like Serena, Usagi and Mamoru, or, you know, if you grew up with the OG bad children's dub, Serena and Damien, or Darian, whatever. Didn't they have a similar kind of age gap where he was like 18?
Oh, no, no, theirs is more pronounced because, yeah, he's like legally an adult. And I think in the Japanese anime, Usagi's like 13.
No, she's not 13.
13 don't even, or 14. But
she's
like,
14. Don't even get me started. You're not about to like clown me over Sailor Moon facts.
Well, here's the thing. Culturally, like, and this is something I know from reading. Are you guys familiar with the writer Ryu Murakami? He wrote.
I know Murakami. I haven't read any of Murakami though.
There's two famous writers Murakami's. Ryu is the one who. He wrote Piercing, Audition, which Takashi Miike obviously made into a movie.
I'm thinking of the one who makes does the big ass books.
Yeah, that's the other guy.
I'm thinking of the other guy.
Well, Ryo Murakami, he does a lot of these sort of really dark, you know, I guess you could call them genre adjacent kind of books. But he does do a lot of, it's set in places like Shinjuku, right? And one of the things that he explores is sort of, he literally has a movie that he directed called Tokyo Decadence, right? But he kind of explores these sort of like, kind of these areas that are equivalent to like the Japanese red light district, right? And like a big part of, and I don't know how it is today in Japan, but there was a big problem with high school girls, basically.
Yes.
What they called selling it, which is basically.
Well, there was a big, like, I only kind of know this tangentially just because it related to some of like the stuff I would read, especially in like research while I was at grad school, but like there was like a big juvenile delinquency scare amongst teenagers, and like especially like teenage girls in like the early, like the late 80s, early 90s in Japan. That's as far as I'm remembering off the top of my head right now, but I do know that was like a big kind of like scare amongst the population.
Ryu Murakami wrote a book called Coin Locker Babies, because apparently there was, I guess if you wanted to call it, an epidemic of young girls getting pregnant and then putting the babies in those little coin lockers that you find at like train stations.
Oh, okay.
I think I remember seeing a reference to that somewhere.
Yeah. So culturally, like just from the standpoint of like, yeah, this movie doesn't, it's not a very serious film. It's a fun film. It's an entertaining film, but to see sort of like the dynamic of a young high school girl. And again, it's very innocent. Like that's what I will say about this movie. Like the way the depiction of the
queen. It was very sweet.
Sweet, right? It's not like,
it's very sweet.
You know, it's not like, it's actually all of the other men that they encounter are kind of like, shit.
The fact this movie is ACAB as fuck.
Yeah, it is definitely ACAB. It's definitely, the police are depicted as pieces of shit, and
they're just as bad as the right, if not worse.
Right, if not worse by the end of the movie. But to give people a sense of like how this movie begins, it's sort of like one of those movies where, you know, it's like,
begins with a great montage, is what it begins with.
It shows you Shinjuku, right? It shows you Shinjuku at that time and like all his glory, and you're introduced to the main character, who's just a drifter, right, more or less. Like
he's a punk with a heart of gold. Right. He's straight out of a shonen anime the 90s.
Definitely got a cool leather jacket with, like, as we said, with his name on the back.
Yeah, bit of a pompadour.
I was getting like Joestar energy.
Yeah.
Like JoJo's energy a little bit, but I always say that about any like really likable male protagonist who's just like, you know, the punk and the 80s, 90s Japanese like delinquent, like with a heart of gold. Like I love those guys. That's my favorite gender.
Yeah, and it's sort of, he definitely is that delinquent with a heart of gold. He's also like a murder savant. Like,
they don't really, they don't give his backstory or anything. Like, he's just like, he's
really
just
good at killing.
Trips dick like first. Well, he's like a Hitchcock protagonist.
He doesn't, I noticed the movies very pointedly, he doesn't mostly kill anybody in the movie. He just kind of like beats guys up and shoots them in the leg.
Well,
he's very good at that.
But he's really good at it.
Yeah. Like remember further in the movie when he's like fighting the guy with the samurai sword and
he breaks the sword, he takes it. Oh yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is this fucking Kill Bill all of a sudden? Like, goddamn. But
yeah, he is just gifted at violence. And everybody just,
he's a superhero.
He can't catch a break. Everybody just gets pissed off at him.
Yeah,
well, you know, all the time. He kind of reminded me of, have either of you seen Do Ra Ra Ra, the anime?
No.
Oh, okay. There's a.
Never seen it.
Okay. There's a character. His name is Shizuo. He's like a bartender with like a terrible temper, but his whole thing is he's like weirdly, inhumanly strong. And they attribute that to, he just drank a lot of milk when he was younger, and he just like was able to throw an entire refrigerator at someone when he was like 7. Yeah. And now he could just like that's his whole thing. And he reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah.
We don't need, why is he strong? We don't need to know. Right. Like, and a modern movie now would try like to explain, like, oh, it's a genetic experiment or something.
Right. That's refreshing though, because we do live in the era of like this sort of executive note, right? Like, if you were making the movie in Hollywood, you know, you would get notes about sort of explaining everything. Like, they want to have. Yeah. Because they feel like they have, let's be honest, they have contempt for the audience, right?
They really, they think they're babies that need to be spoon fed.
Well, the movies, to be fair, the movies that like Marvel films are for adult babies. So like that, like, you know what I mean? It's like, well, let's give this adult baby, the baby has to understand.
Give me my milk, bitch.
Yeah, basically. So this movie is refreshing for a lot of reasons, but that being one of them. Like this guy's good. He's just really good. He's, you know what I mean? Like, he just is. Like, because the way we're introduced to him and the way that him and Mari cross paths is just like chance, right? They're just out in Shinjuku, and he literally, her cat runs away, and her
friend go looking for Chaco.
Chaco, which again, Chaco.
The important thing is she's out with her friend, and they're skipping school, so she can bring Chaco, her cat, to get a bath. So she skipped school with her friend just to take her cat to get a bath.
And to buy Nintendo games.
And to buy Nintendo games, yeah.
Yes, which was, I was like, oh.
It's such scary juvenile delinquency movie.
Right, so they're trying to they're skipping school and her cat gets away. And they chase after the cat and then they find the cat. They hear a noise actually first, right?
Yeah, he's like, oof!
And they're like, oh no. You see the cat lying on top of the body of our guy, our main guy.
That's his only weakness, cats.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, in addition to just being an insanely tough cat, it's kind of like a cat of destiny. Like, it kind of always leads the characters where they need to go in that way.
Yeah. I like that aspect. It's like,
you're right.
It is. The cat is a way for them to sort of like further the plot a lot of times. Like, the cat is like, you know how like I always complain about Save the Cat. If you guys are familiar with Save the Cat?
Kind of.
Save the Cat is a book written by a screenwriter named Blake Snyder. He wrote the movie. I believe he wrote the movie Blank Check. He wrote a book
starring Ben Affleck. Or no, that's,
oh no, that check. One with the, I remember that from when I was a kid. The kid gets a check.
The kid gets a check. He writes $1 million and he buys everything that's like not $1 million. But yeah, so he wrote that movie and he wrote this book, which is a guru book. It's a screenwriting guru book, and it's fucking annoying because it's one of the books that people want to read, along with like Robert McKee's story or Sid Field's screenplay. Like, it's one of those books. Or the hero's journey. So it's a
Like the kind of thing they make fun of in Adaptation.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Exactly that. So Save the Cat, one of the tenets of Save the Cat It breaks down the structure of how a movie should be structured. And there's this idea of saving, the hero must do something and he must save the cat so that the audience is endeared to the hero. It's bullshit because you don't need to do that.
A guy named Snyder wrote a book that emphasizes we need to see the hero saving people. Isn't that ironic?
Shout out to Zack Snyder.
Shout out to Zack Snyder. I'm not going to show my Superman doing anything heroic. I'm going to see him destroy businesses and destroy people.
Cool. Recreating 9/11. To be fair, they all
9/11 Infinity.
Even Marvel 9/11. This cat is one of the plot devices in this movie where, like, pretty much when they don't know where to go, just follow the cat. The cat will go somewhere.
Yeah, it's their white rabbit.
Yeah. It's almost, I don't know if you want to call the cat a MacGuffin. No, the gun that they find is more of a MacGuffin.
That's, like a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Well,
the cat, they come up to get the cat, right? And of course, she thinks he's something's wrong with him. Her friend even says, is he dead? Of course he's not.
Because he got mowed down by a cat. Or the cat like went out, like spooked him or something.
He sat up and said, your cat's heavy, and made a joke.
I liked that. Yeah. That was funny. It was cute.
Laugh, and
because,
then
you know what? I believe him.
But it looked like a heavy cat. No. So then
cat can throw their body around. So
yeah, it's true. I mean, it's not one of those Japan hat is known for those cats that are like,
yeah, they're a little, Chaco was like a little petite.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those
more so, but that's what makes his line like, your cat's heavy, funnier.
So they, after that, we see them, he's like with them in a restaurant and he's like literally like woofing down like a
spaghetti. Looks like, it doesn't even look like ramen, it's just spaghetti.
I think it's like what kind of noodles are they?
I think it is spaghetti. Because when he goes back,
it's an Italian restaurant.
Yes,
there's a sign outside. It's an Italian restaurant.
It's like Sayo. It's
the sign is like a fat Italian chef on their sandwich board outside.
Yeah,
and so he's eating the food, and they're, I guess, at a certain point, right? Like, it's really funny, like. A guy comes over and he looks at him. He's just like a guy who's like works there. He's a waiter.
Like, whose cat is this?
Yeah. And he's looking at him like, and he's like, really doesn't like him. Right. But then the girl sort of steps in. Mari says, it's my cat. And he's very nice and cordial with her and sweet with her. But at the same time, he's like, look, like giving him like the fucking meanest face he can possibly muster. He's like,
argh. He's doing a lot of eyebrow acting.
He's grilling, like, bugging him. Right. And you're like, oh shit. Like, okay. Like, he's got a lot of fucked up energy for this guy. He walks away and then they're gonna leave. He thanks the girls for buying him food, and this is where the sort of like the money, the girl comes from money thing kind of
this is
in there, where the bill is supposed to be 2600 yen or something like that.
I'm not
currency, but she did have it, but she lost her wallet, and then her friends,
like, I wish we had seen that.
Yeah.
Wish we had seen that. I will say
She doesn't have it. Her friend says, well, I just spent all these money on these Nintendo games. So I'm.
Yeah.
And I guess that at that point, he has some money or it's like some little satchel, a little leather satchel on his neck.
Yeah.
And he pulls out.
I think that's a thing in Japan. Yeah.
Yeah. It must be a thing, or especially back then. I mean, this is from like 87.
That's
another thing to take into account is that, like, this is from the 80s, late 80s.
This is so wonderfully 80s. Yeah. I love it. Oh my God.
He offers
to pay, but he only has 200 yen in the little
2000.
Pocket. 2000. 2000.
Which is probably like $2. I don't know. But
a very, very rough guide is to imagine like yen as if we did all our prices in cents.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
It gives you a loose idea of.
So he's short 600, but he tells them to don't worry about it. I'll take care of it, right? So they leave, and then he's in the back, and of course he's talking to the manager, and he's like, "You need to give me, like, I'll pay $2,000 because you're.
I'll do your dishes and
He's like, your asshole server was mean to me for no fucking reason.
It's so funny because he got into an argument with that exact same server earlier. And like many of the action set pieces in this movie, it all just breaks out into kicking.
I went into this movie kind of blind. So the first 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, this is like a romantic comedy. which it is kind of also, but then, yeah, he can't convince the manager to give him a discount or let him work the debt off. And so it just becomes a fight. He like kicks him through the glass.
It's like, it becomes a canon movie.
It immediately a melee breaks out, and holy shit, you know, he beats them all.
What's even better, I don't know if either of you noticed, like during the whole, like that whole prolonged chase scene, I think it's like just at the beginning of it, like as
there's a joke about delinquent. His name sounding funny, which I guess like
delinquent
doesn't cross the language. Fumimaro Ichijoji.
Fumimaro. He's running like it's just as he's running out of the restaurant, and like the like restauranteur and his like mooks are running behind him, and one of them, I swear to God, is carrying a giant fork.
Yeah.
It's a big, it's massive wooden fork.
It's like instead of like a pitchfork, it's just a giant fork.
Right, and then he sees he thinks that the girls left, but before. There's a scene with the two girls outside when he's still inside.
Yeah, she's like, this guy's bad news. Like, and if your parents find out you skip school, they're going to be like mad. And yeah, she
tells her friend basically, like, she's like, I like
she's it. Like, no, I'm in love. She's immediately in love, which yeah, I love like from, yeah. You know what? We also don't need that to be explained.
Right.
Like, love works in weird, mysterious ways. Like, some of the best, like, romances and, like, romance movies, like, they're not, like, they play into more that, like, fairy tale kind of idea of love, like, a love at first sight, or, like, you know, latching onto, like, you know, that is, like a red string of fate. Like, it doesn't need to be justified. Like that sort of relationship, and which is nice, like every now and then.
She just seems to think it's super hot that he's like a
bad
boy who can really put the spaghetti away. She's just immediately down bad.
I agree though. That is like this is like incels. Listen up. This is how you win a girl. You just got to also be really good at kicking too.
Dining, dashing, and all that good shit. Yeah,
dining, dashing, cat rescuing.
Yes. So, yeah. So he thinks they're gone, right? But Mary's waiting for him outside. He turns around, sees her, and smiles. And she asks him, like, "Did you take care of you know that restaurant?" It's like, yeah, it's fine.
I did. It's all good.
Immediately, when the whole staff runs out chasing after him, and she's like, "You're a liar." And he's like, "All right,
you lied."
So they run, and this is when we first encounter the police officers, right? So the police officers are like,
oink, oink.
Right? They're like fucking with these two young kids, right? These two young Japanese guys.
These two bikers.
Yeah, one's a chubby guy with a motorcycle outfit, and this is friendly.
And like curly hair, yeah.
Broccoli kind of hair, kind of. He looks like a zoomer a little bit, but he's not, obviously. This is 80. but you know, so as they're rousting them, they come running past. And they run by, and then the whole kitchen, like the restaurant guys come and like
it breaks out into a fight. Right, everyone is fighting.
He throws a plate at them and it smashes the cop in the head, like right across the face.
I clapped.
Yeah, he was whipping that thing around like Xena or something, man. That was a good bit.
Right. And what's funny is like that it breaks out with a fight between the two cops,
yeah,
guys, and then the guy's like, no, officer, they dined and dashed. So immediately
they're already running away, right, by this point. Like, oh. So everyone's just punching each other. It's so good. It's like a Monty Python bit for like a couple seconds.
Right. So they go on the run. The cops chase after them, and I think there's a certain moment where the girl's going after her cat, right?
Yeah, she's looking for Choco because she has a really shitty wicker basket
that the cat just keeps getting out of constantly. Cat,
yeah, girl. First of all, I do want to RIP Choco. Choco gave his life for love. But I do think it's pretty sus that like, she did get like he got her like a cat that looked the exact same way. But like, I hope she didn't name it Choco. But anyways. Yeah, she's looking for she's looking for Chaco, and those scuzzy, disgusting cops roll up, and the one who's like the worst of them, he's like a real drunk looking one. He just straight up rips her shirt open.
Yes.
Literally assaulting her. So right. We didn't have a reason to hate the cops to begin with.
Right. Fulmaro, he runs up, then he beats the shit out of him, literally like breaks the windshield.
It's awesome. He curb stomps that windshield, kicks it in.
But then he like beats them both up and handcuffs them together, right?
Yeah.
These cops suck. They're terrible cops. Well,
yeah, we'll get to it. Like him just ripping a teenage girl's blouse apart, like unprovoked, is just the start.
Yeah, yeah. He's only ramping up to really reveal how fucking piece of shit he is. So they break into a like random restaurant that's closed to escape, you know, and they flee. And that's where we get the moment where there's sort of that first sort of like slow down, like we're caught together, but like now we're talking and we're sort of interacting, and you can kind of already see like the tension between the two. Like they're like giving like these like
the looks,
the looks, like
the longing teenage looks.
You know what I mean? Like and I think at a certain
point, it's their chance to play house
because she
cooks for him, and like, you know, he's like, oh, I've never had a girl cook for me before.
Well, that comes later.
I've never cooked for a guy before.
Wind back
later, but it all occurs in that.
The setup of like the situation, like, you know, you have your two characters together, and it's, you know, things are slowed down, so, you know, we get to see them how we're laying the foundation for intimacy
here. Right.
Although again, it really, this movie doesn't go past anything beyond a kiss.
Yeah. It's very like, especially between them, like between them, it's very like
first, very innocent.
Love. Yeah.
Yeah. And like at a certain point, he does point out that like her blouse has been ripped. Like we just said, the cop ripped it. And like, she covers up with the little, like, she grabs
it's like a towel, table, like a towel or something.
And he wants to like steal money from the register, and she has issue with that. She's like, you can't steal. We're not thieves, you know what I mean?
We've already broken into this small business owner's tavern.
Breaking and entering, assaulting a police officer.
One of those is not a crime.
Right, true that. But you know what I mean. So they've already committed a series of crimes. But again, it was because they left them no choice. So, you know, she finds a little ad for wild loans. Right?
Wild loan, right. Yeah.
not a mafia scam.
Right, right. She's like, you could go to this place and get a loan. So, of course, you know, being the kind of like, I feel like
he's very brutish.
Yeah, he's like,
and not the brightest bulb.
Right.
He ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
Yeah, he's like,
he was looking kind of dumb with his finger and his thumb.
He shows up to this place with nothing. They're like, where's your check? I don't have a license. He like gives him his coat. He's like, here, this coat, you give me like 10,000 yen or something. Right? And the guy gets pissed off, but the boss is like, okay, let me talk to him. And then immediately they're beating the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Run by the Yakuza. I forget the name.
Shirai clan, I think it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, forgive me for butchering these Japanese names, but that goes completely left when,
because he kicks the shit out of all of them.
Out of all of them, because what happens is that the boss ups the ante by pulling a knife out and saying chop his finger off, right? And at that point, Fumaro's like, fuck this. And he just goes ape shit, beats them up, stabs the guy in the hand, like literally,
and pins him to his desk.
We're forgetting one important element that was established a little bit earlier. Yes, the head of this Yakuza clan who runs this shark loan operation just got a really fancy pistol.
Gold.
Like it's like a ceramic porcelain like handle.
Gold.
It's really pretty.
Walther PPK, I think.
Yeah, and it has like some sort of bird on the handle. It's, and apparently he got it mailed to him, and it has, you know, it's a gun that they use to kill someone. And which again, it's the MacGuffin of this movie, right?
It's the whole MacGuffin, yeah.
It's why they are so desperate to get him, not only because they want revenge for it, but also he has that fucking gun. So he puts that gun away before he even interacts with our hero, right? So when he gets him up in the office and they start to fight, one of the guys grabs the gun because it falls out of the cabinet that he put it up, the boss put it up in. And he tries to shoot, but the clip, there's no clip. So then,
of course, yeah,
he gets beat up, and then our hero takes the gun in the clips. And he proceeds to, like, cover the whole office in the men in gasoline, and then he puts a candle.
Yeah, he lights a candle. Move if you dare, motherfucker.
A wobbly candle, yeah. So nobody, everyone's afraid to go after him.
Right, and then he leaves with the gun, and even the guy, the boss, is like, just give me the gun, and I'll let this shit go. And he's like, fuck you, I'm out. He takes his money, too. He gives him a billfold. He has a billfold full of money, this gun. And at that point, he comes back to see Mari. And, of course, that's when Mari has cooked him his dinner, the food. That's the moment.
A bunch of sunny side up eggs.
Some stuff, yeah.
Just a plate of them.
Yeah. Cantaloupe or something like
that. Cantaloupe, yeah.
And of course.
Japanese breakfast.
He says that he tells her again, he lies. He says he got the loan, which I mean, he did.
In a way, yeah.
He's admirable for a dumb guy.
But the whole, when he first goes in to get the loan and he's like, wait, I need ID. It's like one of those, again, like people just get so mad at him for so little. Like he doesn't try to provoke people, but yeah. He just gets his hackles up when they get pissed at him for no reason. And yeah, it's just like the whole movie.
They really are like hating on my dude. Like he's like they don't like him. Like they're like, who's this young punk, this upstart? You know,
yeah, it's too racist pretty. Against they're all jealous juvenile delinquents.
Yeah, yeah.
There's definitely a phobia against.
So that happens, and he's like, well, listen, we need to go get you. We'll go buy you some, because that was the whole point, is to get the money so he can buy.
Yeah, I want to buy you a nice new jacket,
right? So that you don't come home and wearing your torn blouse. And so she puts on his leather, his iconic, I feel like
his iconic leather jacket.
Iconic leather jacket. And they walk through Shinjuku and it's all nice. They're skipping along.
Well, we also have to mention, like, the other star of this movie is just 80s Shinjuku.
It definitely is like a
gorgeous time capsule.
Location, like, centerpiece, location is character kind of deal, I think.
Especially with like the Japanese like future, well, it wasn't future funk, but like the score, like very jazzy, those songs, like it was like there'll be like neon lit lights like everywhere. It's a very vaporwave adjacent movie.
Yeah, and this is just interesting to see, like even when a little bit further in the story, when like they're going to this club and it's like a club in the daytime, like where people are just in there dancing, and like the whole vibe of it, the whole like is just so like from another, not only another era, but almost just like a completely different, like I mean it is Japan is a very hermetically sealed kind of society in its own way, just based on the sort of geography of it historically, right?
Yeah,
like, the reasons why the empire was able to sort of fend off any outsiders and keep Japan so, you know, to themselves in terms of their own sort of culture is because of that, like geography. It's just they're on this island out in the middle of nowhere. It's, you know, it's off to themselves, you know what I mean? So it's
different. Yeah,
like, and on that level alone, to just kind of see like, wow, like, and that's one of the reasons I find myself attracted to like Japanese things in general, because I feel like they do have a weird kind of unique perspective, especially when they meld their influences from the West. Like where it comes out in this way that's totally different than like,
yeah, this feels like, a lot of this feels very like straight up like 80s B movie action.
Yeah.
Like I kept thinking like, you know, like this is like a canon movie by way of Seijun Suzuki.
Right. Yeah. And go ahead, Stu.
Well, I was going to say, I think part of it too is that not only are they synergizing cultural influences from the West, but they're having to compete within their own domestic, and this is true, I think, of any country with its own film industry, is you're always competing with America. I mean, since American culture is everywhere, you're always trying to outdo them, but because you're I wouldn't say Japan in the 80s is a poorer country than America, but it's one whose culture industry won't have the same resources because it doesn't have the same reach. It's got a smaller domestic market and a smaller foreign market. So you're always trying to do more with less to provide something that counters whatever Hollywood is putting out and having translated and sent to your country.
Yeah. And this is right around the time too, where the late 80s, where that sort of that economic boom is about to happen. You know what I mean?
It's at the peak, because right. the bubble kind of pops around, I think, 1990.
Yeah, I remember it was the 90s when that was a thing, right? When it was like a Japan sort of bubble burst. And like, so it did have that sense of like, it was viewed as a sort of like futuristic kind of place. You know what I mean? Like, in its own kind of weird way. So that's definitely a big element to sort of the Shinjuku love story, is that like this third sort of character in this is Shinjuku, like you guys said. And it makes for like the chases, like, because this movie is just two kids being chased the whole time,
but it makes
the chases all that more like interesting, just, you know what I mean, in terms of how they stage the scenes. And it's because you're like constantly going through all these people and going to all these different places, and it's like every place that they run into is this sort of
unique. Oh, like this is more towards like the climax, but like the indoor like black like greenhouse.
Yeah,
like where they're growing, looks like they're growing cabbage.
That
set piece is so fucking awesome.
Like Donkey Kong Country for a second.
Or like the grocery store aisle in the Rugrats Search for Reptar game.
So at this point, we left off, I think, Mary, he takes Mary to a department store. She picks out some stuff. She's like,
some really outrageous.
The fits in this movie are amazing.
And you know what?
Let me just say that. Holy shit.
You can find some of these pieces. They would probably be thousands of dollars online.
On Depop for like hundreds of dollars. But the fits in this movie are fucking incredible. I would love to just like, if I had a closet full of like Japanese 80s fashions, like I'm set for life. Yeah. Like I love the silhouettes. Like there's the lady singing in that lounge, she's wearing like the gold sequin dress. That reminded me kind of like Juliette Lewis in Strange Days a little bit. But yeah, the even just like, I love like sailor fukus and like how those like just like not just like the cultural sort of representation that they feel, but just I really love just the whole like aesthetic of them. Just yeah, the big ups to like the costume department of this movie. You did your fucking job.
And again, like, I'm not sure if Fuamaro is like a brand as well, or I don't know, but like it is prominently displayed on the back of his leather coat. Like, and so, but it's his name. So, but again,
yeah,
he takes her to this department store, right? She gives him back his jacket now, so she can try on her yellow windbreaker
with the Memphis cut pattern.
Yeah, very
or that cup pattern, like on the front of it, kind of.
Looks like you guys are familiar with the TV show Ghost Rider.
Oh yeah, of course. I watched a couple episodes of Ghost Rider not even like 2 months ago. I swear,
the same windbreaker that like the kid Jamal wears.
Yes. It's right in that, like, looks like, yeah.
If you want to, people.
Popped right from a 90s PBS show.
It was from a 90s PBS show, but like it's one of those style of like windbreakers. But as she goes to try it on, he goes up to the department store lady, hands her a bunch of money. And tells her like, yeah, you know, this is for whatever she gets. I have things I gotta do. I gotta go.
I'm no good. I'm a delinquent. Now, better off.
So he leaves her at that point, right? And again, like, I think at this point, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is when we're introduced to another member of the Yakuza, the guy in the, I don't know exactly what his position is.
He's like the son of the guy, or he's like the up and coming.
Yeah, he's like
he's the young up and coming.
Yeah, he's the Zebra Jacket.
Because he's talking to one guy, an older guy, and he's telling him about like, you know, arranging a marriage, and you know, this is good for you. We're counting on you. We need to make sure you have that gun though that killed this guy. We killed this guy with.
Yeah, and there's going to be like a passing of the torch, kind of.
So it's super important that they get that gun. Just again ups the ante that gun is gone, because when he calls the boss of the I forget the name of that group again, that family, Shiraiya family clan, the Shiraiya clan. He explains to him, you know, like we don't have it. Like, this guy beat the shit out of us, and, and we're looking for him.
Like, well, you lost it.
Yeah, you're right. And at the same time, we're back introduced to the cops. Of course, the cops are now super pissed off. They've gotten out of their handcuffs, but the one cop is like, literally like, yo, if you like, we need to find him. But like, if you do find him first, like, do not do nothing, because I reserve the right to beat him to death first. You know what I mean?
He's going full Cap and Ahab on
right.
And this kid's his white whale.
Well, I mean, was this? I forget. I even though I just watched it. To be fair, Namamuro did like, well, again, not that it was undeserved. This Namamuro is a hero for doing this, but what, he handcuffs the cop to the door in the restroom and then pulls his pants down, and we get a lovely little sensor.
I was about to say, so he's walking.
Is that it?
Yeah. So he's walking through Shinjuku.
Okay.
And the cop sees him, and the chase ensues, and they go to that club, that club where the people are dancing in the morning and shit.
The club where, yeah, people are going like this.
Bathroom. Robin. He goes to the bathroom, follows him in, and that's when he ambushes him, handcuffs both of his arms above his head to a little like bar of a weird bathroom setup, and he pulls his pants down, right, boxers and all, and there's this heart.
Well, no, he cuts them. He cuts them off.
Right, cuts them. You're
right.
Cuts
them off. Yeah, and it's censored with a heart.
Right, and there's a little heart, a black.
It's like a cutout. Yeah.
Yeah.
Superimposed
like
over
in camera optical.
It's so.
I love that. I love that.
It's a nice touch.
Little creative decisions and visual cartooniness.
It's pretty funny too.
I'd like quasi facetiously call this movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off meets Running Scared.
That's
melody. Because Running Scared's also centered around trying to track down a gun.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's literally that. Ferris Bueller's Day Off meets Running Scared. and that's probably a better synopsis than the one we read on Letterboxd for sure. It is. But so obviously he ditches that cop at that point, right? And leaves him there. Which people are like, I remember, I think like
they come, the girls eventually come into the bathroom to point and laugh at his tiny penis.
Right. They're like pointing.
Like, oh.
Partner leaving laughs. His partner gets there and he's laughing at him. So
the partner's like, look at your little dick.
Right. He's like literally like bent down, pointing, laughing. Ah, ha, ha. Of course. So he gets close to him and he headbutts the shit out of him. Like, you know what I mean? So at this point, you know, he's pissed off. Everybody that he interacts with, he just pisses them off even more at each interaction. So now he's really mad, right? And then I think there's a moment where he's like, he's escaped the cops and he's just like out sitting like outside in Shinjuku, and he looks up at this like
it's in the big like it's on a big giant monitor, and it's a girl with a ponytail, but it's from like behind, and she turns around and it's a white lady, but right. It's, you know, the girl Mari has the ponytail.
Yeah. And at that point he looks, and then he sees some of the Yakuza driving through, looking around, trying to spot where they can find him. So he's like, oh shit, I gotta get out of here. So then he runs away. And at this point I believe this is when they go to like this, it looks like an indoor mall, but it kind of looks like it's like almost like underground.
I've seen malls like that there that are in downtown areas that are in or under like towers and are attached to metro stations. So they have those in Vancouver.
Yeah. So, and I've been to Vancouver, so I've seen one of those in Vancouver. Yeah. But they're in this place. Right. And at this point, there's a lot of people there, but there's three guys specifically, like three Yakuza. They see him.
They're walking around. They're like, there he is. Get him.
Right. And the one guy like throws this cart towards him, and then the whole fight breaks out.
It's really funny.
Yeah. The gun slides away. But of course, the guy goes for it.
Like a Stooges moment.
And that's when he goes like John Woo. Like our hero just kind of grabs the gun, shooting every guy he's shooting. He's hitting them right where he wants to, right in the knee, right through the wind. Like, you know what I mean? You're like, holy shit.
Yeah, he's just a perfect shot. He's like a 50s Western cowboy, you know, shooting the gun out of the hand.
Can we just say, like, you know, even though like this is, you know, for an 80s like action movie, you know, you not all the you see like the punches don't like hit, like it's not modern day choreography, but it's a lot of fucking fist throwing, people being thrown into objects and kicked. Yeah. And damn if that doesn't have more impact than like two guys in CGI mech suits, like
there's no
throwing each other around a CGI city.
Yeah, there's no digital effects in this.
It's all like. Or it's all choreography.
Some pretty great squibs in this.
The squibs are great. I love a good squib.
Real squib.
Save our squibs.
But this is at this moment when this occurs, this is when Mari's and him reconnect, because she's there and she hears the gunshot and she runs back to see what's happening and she sees, oh, it's my guy. It's my love.
And so she pretends pretends it's a film shoot.
She grabs the PA microphone, is like, all right, Kai, we're gonna need to set up for another shot, so all the injured people stay on the ground. We're not taking autographs, which of course prompts everyone to rush in. And the guys that are all shot and beat up start giving autographs.
They're literally like signing the autograph. Yeah, I laughed at that part too. This movie definitely has a sense of humor through the whole thing.
It has a cartoony logic to it.
Yeah, it does. But it keeps upping the ante too, because the levels of violence that it gets to, you just don't see coming. Like,
until the last act becomes like a James Cameron set piece.
It does become, like Die Hard or Rambo or something by the end.
Guys with massive like grenade launchers and like flamethrowers.
When we get into the third act, every single henchman has a signature weapon. So there's a guy with a scoped 44 Magnum, a guy with an M60 that has a grenade launcher, a flamethrower guy, a pistol guy, like every single, and each has like a unique cause, like they're all individuated, which is always a thing I appreciate.
In an action movie. It really goes full like commando nuts, like level up. Fuck Rambo, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really crazy. And I love that aspect of this movie, because you definitely are like you said, if you go into this blind, like Stu said, like you have no idea where this is going to go.
Yeah, it's like it's a romantic comedy, and it's like, oh, it's kind of like an action screwball, and then it's like it just keeps escalating.
Yeah, it feels kind of like Something Wild in that, like kind of analogous to that, whereas, you know, Something Wild doesn't go like, you know, to go in the schlocky action route, this more kind of goes into, but like, you know, with the last part of that is like the last 30 minutes of Something Wild is like really tense, like that's you. So it reminded me of a lot of that, but like, you know, more goofier.
I've seen this before. So what were your guys's, like, what were you guys, by the time that this thing really starts like ramping up, like what were your guys' reaction to that? Because I'm interested in that. Because this is a movie that's just like doesn't prepare you for what the fuck happens. Really.
No, yeah, like I thought this was gonna be a romantic comedy, but like the opening was very breezy and snappy and briskly paced, and I was having fun. Then he beats up the guys at the restaurant, and I'm like, oh, okay, and then you know the big chase. And then as it keeps escalating, I thought the movie, the more it went on, the more I was just having a ball. I was just completely on board. I was like, just a lot of fun and really well paced, and the action is very competently executed.
Yeah,
and has some really great set pieces.
So it's like, really, I find it like, I know Nicole says like it's cartoonish, but it's like she's right. But it's like it's almost like it's like a live action manga, like, you know,
it's like it's an anime.
Anime
logic.
Yeah, it's like, because even the way that people who they cast in these roles, they have sort of particular looks, like all the people are really arch, right? Like,
yeah, like the performances are also very big,
very
and exaggerated. Yeah,
exaggerated and shit, like all the cut from the cops to the bad guys to even our two main characters, like, you know what I mean, they're just very like these, like,
yeah, she's guys. Very she's yeah. very shoujo pro tag.
Yeah, she's like, look, she's looking loving with these wet, like, you know, you can see the tears.
Yeah, you can almost like, there's a point where you can almost see like the giant anime eyes.
It definitely has that vibe. So after they get back together, they go to this restaurant place, and apparently, because again, Shinjuku, of course, the Yakuza's plugged in, so they know, like, somebody gives them the heads up, like, yo, they're in this restaurant, you know what I mean? So they run up to them with guns, and of course, they have the drop on him, right? But again, he's just really good at violence. So
he's so good at it.
Them all of, like even with the most horny moves, he's got his hands up and he's like, don't shoot. And then I think he like distracts them to get them to look over that way. The gun's over there. And then he like pulls a gun out from behind like a painting and starts.
Yeah, he like gestures like it's in one of the fish, because this restaurant's full of fish tanks and stuff. Yeah. And he's like, oh yeah, it's like in the fish tank.
Like Joseph and
yeah, it's very like every second that they think they're going to get this guy, he just really just gets the upper hand every time. And even then, like, he has the gun on the boss guy and he tells them to throw their guns in the fish tank, and they do. But then the girl comes out the back with the owner of the establishment. He has like a butcher knife to her neck.
Yeah, he has a knife to her neck.
Yeah, so, but again, they get out of it.
Yeah, because she gets her hand on the gun at that point. Right. And then she like intimidates all the accusers.
Yeah, then she smashes like a vase over his head.
At the lights and the...
Yeah,
and the fish tank and screaming that she'll kill them. Like, she goes hard for a second with that gun.
She definitely.
I was proud of her. I clapped. She did that moment.
Yeah, she definitely. And I think it's funny too. Like when they're talking, like he's like playing a little arcade game. And when they're
embedded in the table barcade. Yeah,
one of those old school ones with the game and the table. And
so cool.
She asked him like, have you ever shot a gun before? And he's like, no.
Yeah, I know, he's just natural born.
You said like, well,
either lying or he is
he was like, he's very modest about his abilities to kill people or beat people up and damn near kill them. Yeah. They managed to run away, get away from the Yakuza again, right? And I think it's at this point, when do they run back? They run back into, because what we did leave out, which is the first time they get into the scuffle with the cops, right? And he like handcuffs them. They don't take the cat with them, and they tell the two kids.
Yeah, they told the two biker.
Those two biker haircut. Guys just see him whip ass, and they're just and immediately they're like we will swear fealty right, to this staying. Badass.
At that point, they're like, we stand you. Like we're like we're acolytes of you now. Like we're rolling with you now. Like regardless, like so.
Yeah, we're your boys now.
So they're
tasked with finding Chaco.
Yeah, so they bring Chaco back to them, and he ends up like taking one of their bikes, right?
They borrow one of their bikes.
He's chasing them through the streets again, because again, it's a series of chases, like
chasing after chasings that are all well done.
Yeah, they are. They're really all real. I'm really curious about like how many American directors or just directors in general from the West. Or have seen this movie, because I feel like 87, and there's a lot of shit in this movie that like you'd be like, oh, it's aping American shit. Be like, no, not really. Like if you look at the timeline, like a lot of the movies that we are talking about, like this movie like predates them.
Like yeah
like I was also thinking hard, like before, you know, true romance and not really, but I was also kind of thinking Natural Born Killers a little bit.
It's before a lot of those action movies.
Yeah, and it's before all of those.
Yeah, like, so it's like one of those things where it's like, I wonder like if this is one of those films that due to its access, like.
How did you come across this film though? That I don't think we mentioned that.
Because it's kind of like one of the, again, this is the reason that I started this podcast was that, like I got so tired, like, and I've been this way anyways, I'm always like looking for shit. Like I'm just
okay.
Always,
so you just like happened.
Yeah, I'm, because you know, a big aspect of what I like, I'm a writer, so and a big thing with me is like I'm constantly like writing, and I specifically screenplays. Like for a long time, well, like I do more than screenplays, but I lived in Los Angeles for a few years, and you know, I've written and worked on several different projects over the years, and like I just got so bored with like that's what I talk about when I complain about,
yeah,
you guys complain about like Marvel films. I know people that work there. I've worked with certain producers. Like I know the mandated bullshit notes that these people get. Like the script, you don't have no idea. Like these scripts that like get churned out are that people like tout about the town are like so like boilerplate, like boring, like homogenized from the go. Like these are like the types of notes you get. So me being so fed up with like just movies that like are uninspiring, like I've been doing it forever. Like I search, I'm like,
yeah,
what the fuck is that? Like so that I came across this movie just doing the random searching that I'm always doing for movies. And I couldn't find much about it, but I found like a still image of this.
Okay, what still was it?
It was an image of our hero with a giant fucking, the giant fucking handgun, the M60.
Oh, yeah.
M60 and a fucking, as a girl with a cat. I'm like, what is the fuck is this?
Yeah, the poster image, which doesn't happen in the film. She doesn't wear like that cute pink dress that she wears on like the poster, but the best shot of the movie is definitely like at the climax when he comes out, like Rambo with the cat in his jacket.
Yeah, and the flamethrower, and it's like Sigourney Weaver and Aliens.
Exactly,
you know?
Like Sigourney Weaver and Aliens.
It is really that. So like upon coming across that movie in that image, I was like, I got to track this movie down.
And yeah, happy that's to all it takes.
Because it is like fucking nowhere. Like you can't really access it. And like I said, I know that there's a DVD that's like over $100 or some shit, like an import.
I got my hands on a good looking Blu-ray rip.
There is some rips out there that are really nice. Yeah. Like the rip that I have is pretty decent quality, and I was wondering if like there's one where like there's any sort of, I doubt it though, it's 1987, but it may be like, I wonder if there's a copy over in Japan that has like any sort of like supplemental sort of shit.
Yeah,
a little bit more, because this is one of those is right for that kind of thing. I mean, I guess
this is a hidden gem.
I do wonder if this movie was a hit in Japan, like how successful it was,
right,
in its own.
I know it was
context.
It's a Toei. Toei was at least one of the production companies who worked on it. But Toei is also just one of those giant like corporations as well. So that's not really saying anything distinctive, but. Yeah, there's a lot of this is done so well, and just like, I don't know, maybe for all we know, it was just unremarkable when it came out overseas, but
there's so many
or whatnot. We don't know.
And there's so many, you know, and that's a big thing about, you know, just like there's like, it feels endless. Like, I feel like you guys started your podcast about Marvel movies, and since they do 50 a day or 50, since they have
50, we're going to be doing this into our graves.
Right. Like, but there's so many movies that have been made that like are out there just floating around, like that. It's like the goal of like Mutual Aberration Society is to do like a podcast about, because I feel like there are a million movie podcasts, right? There are a million, and they talk about the same 100 movies, maybe. You know what I'm saying? Like I've heard about like Halloween. What take exists about Halloween that you haven't heard? You know, what take about Jaws? What take about all these movies that we've grown up on and love? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Speaking of Aliens, as much as I love that movie, what is there? Like, yeah, I kind of felt that we did our Paul Verhoeven episode, which was fun to do, but it was also like at the same time, like everybody's kind of.
We talked about flesh and blood.
I listened to that.
And gave the I started the much needed reappraisal on Hollow Man.
Yeah, but
so
like every
when
like
Hollow Man Renaissance it was like comes
in,
back
in Starship Troopers, it was like the what's kind of like they've had their reappraisal already, and it's kind of like what's there left to say.
I know what you mean. Yeah, there's just so many, like, you know, there's shit like this all over, you know what I mean? Like there's shit like just movies that are like this movie is cool as fuck. Like if this movie got like a Vinegar Syndrome release or some shit, this shit would be huge.
This would be a good or an Arrow video release. This could definitely be on Arrow.
On that note, there was a movie, another Japanese film from this era that I saw someone posted like a 30-second clip on YouTube, and I immediately went and found it and watched it on New Year's Eve. Called Gunhead.
Oh yeah, that's on my my to watch list.
Yeah, I put a cop. You can cut this if it'll get you in trouble. But like I put a copy on a mega upload for someone else. I can send you the link if you want it.
Definitely, please send me the link.
But I enjoyed it a lot because like a lot of just like great model and miniature work and production. Is like
Bandai Namco.
Yeah,
they make your toys.
I think Power Rangers.
But like It's so fun to watch because they build this robot. They you've got a gun head, which is like a 40-foot robot, and they built one. He's in real life, it was like 14.
Does he fight Chainsaw Man? Like,
Chainsaw Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, and that's another thing, right? You just mentioned, Nicole mentioned Chainsaw Man. Like, you would never be able to make Chainsaw Man here. Like, and what I mean by that is not like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it exists as a manga, right? And then they made it into a Hulu anime. Like, but you couldn't imagine someone coming up in America with an idea like Chainsaw Man.
To make a multi like story, yeah. Big universe.
It would have to be a web comic. That would be the only way it would get done.
There's no, like, you know what I mean? Like, it would have to be an independent creator own thing, and it would have to be somebody who really just believed in it and put it out there, because you're not going to find anybody to actually release that, like, here, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm a big advocate for, like, people just like creating things on the fringes, and because that's where all the stuff that we like, right? All the stuff, I use the general we, like, stuff that, like, people talk about, it's like most of it it was made by people that were told no, right? Like, you can't make that. And they was like, fuck you, I'm gonna make it. And they made it,
yeah.
It became a thing. And now multi-billion-dollar companies own the rights to it, and they fucking, you know, destroy it, like Disney, you know, like they do all that type of shit. Like even Marvel stuff, like those were comic books written by like 18-year-olds who didn't want to go to the war.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And they accepted like the $25 like royalty one-time compensation because they didn't think it was gonna pop off the way it did.
Right. And Marvel goes out of their way to fuck every creator.
Yes.
So, you know, which I mean?
I don't understand why they're so committed to that, given all the money they make and have and all just like the basic goodwill you could get out of cutting those guys in. Like, what are you out? What are you losing?
It's just greed. It's capitalism, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just
like, even capitalistically, I feel like they're coming out worse for the bad PR than if they just cut the guys a fucking check for a couple hundred grand. Like, that's pennies on the dollar what you pay fucking Robert Downey Jr. to be in Spider-Man 4 for 5 minutes. Like, goddamn.
Yeah, it's really bleak. It's really, like, when you really look at sort of like the state of cinema. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You could almost say it's dead.
Yes, the death of cinema. As Nicole has mm-hmm. mentioned already. Yeah. It's
our podcast name.
Yeah, well, it's a podcast name. But to get back to the Shinjuku love story, all of this sort of like when they're being chased, and I think Mari and him get the motorcycle, at a certain point they go to the alley, right? And the cat, she says the cat's hungry, and so he's like, I'm gonna go get
he goes off to go buy milk,
which is, again, the cat, so
the
is
cat would to yeah the cat like, yeah although cat you should story. Don't give cats milk, although yeah.
So at that point,
whatever,
yeah, at that point he comes back and she's gone because
there's a note left behind,
like, a note left behind because the Yakuza see her, right? And there's a note that says, we had your girl come to, you know, come to the loan place or whatever, the fucking
come get your girl. So come get the girl you pulled by being delinquenty.
Right. We got your bitch. You know, that's
your bitch.
That's what it seems like, right? And so he's like, okay, so he's pissed now. So like, he's super pissed. So you see him like driving up to meet the two dudes that he got the bikes from. And because he told them previously, meet me back at this garage.
Yeah, meet me at the west parking lot or something.
Back there, and he's telling them the deal, like, yo, because I believe at a certain point, like, he grabs a whole bunch of like Molotov cocktails.
They make a bunch of Molotovs. And he's like, you made a ton of these, like more than I can use, like 500 Molotov cocktails.
There are a lot of Molotov cocktails.
Like a quick tooling up sequence, right? Where he's like, he gets his gun, puts it in the belt, puts the knife on his, and he's like,
yeah,
grabs a backpack full of Molotov cocktails. Then he slaps the fat kid and says, you can't come with me.
You know? Yeah, he's like, sit with this one out, kid. Ride or die for
this. And I love, this is a thing that I kind of associate with like a lot of like at least anime and other Japanese films and things I've encountered, which is just that kind of level of just like unhesitant determination. It's like there's no brooding or back and forth or what am I going to do. It's like, as soon as he sees that note, he's like, okay, I am going to storm Yakuza headquarters and fight all of them.
Right, and he just
love me a stupid he runs into a hall protagonist,
throws a fucking Molotov cocktail. Then the guys are like, "I'm gonna shoot him," and he's like, "No, I need to, you know." And he puts out the head, like the other young boss guy makes the guy put out the fire after he knocks out the old dude, and he finds out, oh shit, we don't have her. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's a wrinkle. Like,
she got stolen from us. We didn't tell you.
And you find out the cops call because the cops have stolen her from the Yakuza guys. And now they have her.
They've handcuffed her in some way, like an abandoned hospital.
In an autopsy room.
In an autopsy room. And the head, like, disgusting cop is just, he just can't wait to rape her.
He goes to 11 on being just creepy.
So gross. He
becomes the ultimate, like, sicko creep, like, rapist dude. Like, you know what I mean? Super rapey energy, like, just, I can't,
like,
wait. Relishing,
practically drooling, right, like, out the mouth.
This, you know what I mean? Like, and you're like, okay, bro, like, that's like, we hopefully
a predator.
Like, hopefully you die soon. This is when it really ramps up, though. So he throws the rest of the backpack of Molotov, leaves, jumps out a window, gets on his motorcycle, and speeds off. And that's when he goes to the hospital. But as he's going to the hospital, he gets chased down by the Yakuza because they're like, fuck this. And that's when all of the guys come with their signature weapons after him.
When we get to that hydroponic farm. And
I love that set piece.
A great running gun battle.
Gun battle, which is pretty cool. Like, they really utilize, like, that whole, like, set where it's like,
It kind of reminded me, I don't know, and this isn't a knock against movie, because I think this both this movie and the movie that came to mind are fantastic, but it reminded me at the end of Miami Connection, where it just goes like it's raining and it just goes full on violence is the answer. I can't, what is that place called, Sue? Hydro farm?
I figured it was some kind of hydroponic farm because they're growing something that's all indoors.
Yeah,
that I really like that action set piece scene.
Yeah, but this scene is like very, like, it's an action set piece, right? Like, and you're introduced to these guys, these characters, like Stu mentioned, like, each character has their own unique look.
The mooks.
Yeah, there's a designated grenade guy, and that's his thing, is he has grenades.
They keep throwing it back and forth.
The grenade with the longest fuse in the history of grenades. And they throw it back and forth three times.
He picks it up, throws it back, and finally it blows up after like the fourth throw. it's pretty amazing. And then it becomes a foot chase again, and then it becomes Donkey Kong Country because they get in those carts.
We get a minecart fight.
I was thinking it felt like all of a sudden it felt like we were in a, like, James Cameron movie, like The Abyss or something. It just, like, felt very like cramped mechanical space. I don't know why my brain just thought, like, jumped to, like, 80s James Cameron, or no, it made me think like the end of Terminator. With like the climax of that movie a little bit, or but no, the little carts. It was like Donkey Kong Country too.
Like, the lights go out and then he has that laser sight, like, you know what I mean?
On an M60 that also has a grenade launcher and it's also got a laser sight.
That's made for pinpoint accuracy. This is for pure destruction. But you got a fucking laser.
Yeah. But it's I mean, that's like, that's a Call of Duty loadout he's carrying, man.
Yeah. So and then at that point, though, this is right before the Donkey Kong Country moment. But that's when we're introduced to the guy with the flamethrower backpack, because they can't see. And he's like, yo, light up the flamethrower so we can see better. So he's just like shooting this flamethrower all around randomly throughout the farm, like, and it's just, again, it's just a reason to be stylistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, they're blowing, like, there's a lot of squibs going off, whole, like, aluminum sided chunks of this building are blown. That's when the lights go out, is the M60 grenade launcher guy grenades the shack with the electricals in it after the guys in there screwing with the lights. Like, it gets really big. Like,
yeah. Oh, lots of great explosions.
Yeah.
Stuff that would not be in a movie today. It certainly wouldn't like look like practical and tactile the way this does, or, you know, like 80s action movies did, especially. No,
it's definitely like everything about it is so like, it's so entertaining. Like, it's just, it's fun, and you could tell like they're having fun doing this. Like, you know what I mean? They're like,
yeah.
Like the whole movie just oozes just pound for pound. And this is a distinction I like to draw in terms of like the art of film, but also like the craft of entertainment.
Right.
You know, like that's what I would say you used to get with like the better era of blockbusters is, they might not have been super deep artistically or whatever, but they were well crafted. As entertainment. And this movie is really well crafted as entertainment. It's making the most of everything it has.
Yeah. And even like, just, it's just like the way that the movie sort of plays itself out is so like you were saying, Stu, like it's not trying to be anything more than what it is.
Yeah,
and because of that approach, it is kind of, you know what I mean, so much more than it is.
Like, especially now,
it's trying to be the most of what it is with what it has.
It's like we're going all the way with the shit. Like, yeah, you know what I mean.
Like, I feel like if they tried to make this movie like, if they tried to adapt this, it would be like okay, well, the guy has to be Seth Rogen. Or, you know, some stupid like comedian, and, you know, it's just like a straight up comedy movie with like Saturday Night Live alumni. Nobody's going to see because it's going to go straight to like Hulu or Netflix.
I haven't seen Bullet Train, but I feel like Bullet Train is like the modern equivalent of something like this, like where it's like a big action movie and they've cast it with all the stars, Brad Pitt, whatever, and it's supposed to be entertaining and fun. But if you watch Bullet Train, I'm sure that it feels nothing like this. Like, you know what I mean? I'm sure it feels CGI'd as fucking moments, and just very.
I think it's by the guy who did Deadpool.
The director of Deadpool, right? Directed.
Okay. Right. I haven't seen it, but
I have no
Bullet Train.
The movie set in Japan, ironically.
Bullet Train.
Yeah, Bullet Train. Yeah. So it's like one of those things where it's like, no, I just watched the real thing. You know what I mean? I'll go watch a
yeah.
I don't want to watch this westernized version of something, like, because again, you know what you're getting. And
it's like a diet Pepsi, yeah, or something. Not quite the right analogy. I'm just thinking because there is a little bit of Pepsi product placement in this movie.
I mean America specifically, like we used to be like a country where they made a certain kind of movie like this, mm-hmm, well, and we don't do that anymore. Like, it's not.
Yes, sometime around 2008, like, just,
yeah, it's just like the movies that like we have
now, like, what came out in 2008, I wonder.
Yeah, the movies that we have now are like that are action, big spectacle. They're movies like Extraction with fucking Thor, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not
more like bore.
They're not like, they're just, they don't. And then you watch a movie that's like from Indonesia, like you watch one of the, you know, The Raid, or you watch even the Timo's movies, the guy who made the Night Comes For Us, and they're just so much more visceral, you know what I mean? And like,
yeah,
like it's made by people, and it's
weighty, and it's not trying to, you know, it's not treating its audience with like kid gloves, or, you know, trying to have that universal appeal. It's, you know, primarily trying to do, you know, the genre that it is the best way it can do.
They also want to impress you with the sense of like, we actually did the thing. Like, did you ever see The Protector, the Tony Jaa?
Yeah, the Tony Jaa one.
That scene, that one take up the spiral restaurant fight.
Yeah.
Like, they did stuff like that because they knew it was like, it would blow you away to watch it, to see that they actually like did it. And you don't, you know, computer effects are generally very impressive.
Yeah, and it's even like, and I feel like that's Asian cinema in general, like in terms of like, regardless of the country, like, you know, like obviously Like, I look at a movie, like, I don't know if you've seen this movie, it's called like Hong Kong Godfathers. And there's a scene where like, it's just guys with butcher knives going up an escalator. And it is the most like, and it's just fucking insane. Like, you know what I mean? It's almost like, and again, a Korean.
Is it in the canon of great elevator scenes, in your opinion?
It's amazing. Like, it's just,
okay.
It's like, as they go up, it's just pure mayhem. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and you're just like, it's just, how long can they sustain it? It's almost like, you know, when an old boy, when they have the
yeah. Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like, it's akin to that, but in its own way, because they're like going up, and it's just like, it's like them going up some sort of gauntlet. You know what I mean? Where it's like, holy shit, like, when is it going to stop? Like, and you don't get that here. You get John Wick here, and it's like, okay, John Wick kills 85 people and I feel nothing at all. No, not even my pulse.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy those movies, but I know what you mean. They're like kind of the best we get, and there's not at that level.
Yeah, I like the first one, and Derek
Cole. Yeah, I like the first John Wick, but the second one did nothing for me.
I kind of get a kick out of the weird like fantasy version of a crime hitman world is kind of the part that I enjoy most from those.
Here's the thing about that though. That script used to be called The Scorn, and it was Derek Kolstad wrote that a long time ago. And it was just a straight up revenge movie, which is what the first John Wick is. And what it's become now is like, we got to make it into
a franchise. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Movie, chapter movie. One, chapter two, chapter three.
Point Break with cars, right? Literally ripped off Point
Break. Yeah.
And just with tuner cars. And now it's, what is it? What the fuck is it? Like,
it's supposed to be like a Fast and Furious level, like franchise.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I've read Fast 10, the script for Fast 10. It is horrible. Like, you know,
I've never seen any of those movies.
Neither have I.
That said, I did rewatch Point Break recently, and that's an example of like, you know, they actually jumped out of an airplane to make that movie, and that's kind of why it's part of why it's awesome.
The last Fast movie I saw was, I think it was the fourth one, the one before James Wan came. I haven't seen anyone, but I've read the scripts because I had to, like, basically, because I have a working relationship with one of the actors in the movie, and he doesn't read scripts. So I had to read the script, and it's like, these scripts are bad. Like, they're not good. And again, like, maybe I don't care, whatever.
You should tell him to fire his agent.
No, he
works. Well, he's making a lot of movie money off those.
No. His agent, like, is great because he keeps him working. Like, he just keeps him getting movies.
Okay, true.
So he's getting money off of all these movies now.
And I mean, these movies do make, those movies do make that, like a bajillion dollars.
A lot of money too, by the way. The people.
Yeah. People, because they love, it's about family.
It's so dumb.
The family. Fastest family.
Family and friendship are like the themes you default to when you can't think of anything else, I feel like.
Yeah, and like Vin Diesel is like, yeah, him showing up late to the new movie and like literally the director quitting.
I heard there's like a ton of drama because it's like guys like him and The Rock and Statham all have these like clauses in their contracts where they can't lose fights and have to be equally badass and everything. It's
and just knowing what I know behind the scenes is pretty funny. Like, it's just really funny. Like, Jason Momoa is in the new one, and he's like apparently doing like a very Joker-esque performance.
Oh my god! enough! I am so fucking
spoilers. Like, there may be, and I'm not confirming or denying, there may be a giant machine that tunnels through the earth that comes out that they fight against. I'm not saying maybe.
Wait, this is gonna be the movie series that's just about fast cars and hanging with bros.
I mean, that's the only place left to go is to just become a superhero movie franchise and have the Underminer from the Incredibles.
They are basically their own version of Marvel Universe bullshit, and that's what they turned John Wick into. You know what I mean? Where it's like there's a whole universe of like the hotel and the rules in the hotel and all these people, and like it's just
Now they're doing that like Ryan Johnson and the fucking Knives Out. They're doing like that equivalent with the mystery genre.
I'm in the minority about the first Knives Out. I hate the first Knives Out. I hate
it. I only saw it because Chris Evans is in it, and I thought he looked very handsome in his sweatshirt, and they did actually film that movie, at least part of it, in the city I was going to grad school in. So, and which I saw, I was in the theater seeing that movie and I was mostly on my phone, but that, never mind that. But yeah, there was the chase scene and it drives past like a mural. And I was, the theater I was sitting in is literally across the street from that mural. So that was a weird like Inception moment. But yeah, otherwise I have no fucking interest in seeing glass on Stinky Onion. I don't care.
You know, here's the thing, like glass onion, Knives Out, whatever the fuck it is. The first one, it's a trick. And what I say by that is like, it tricks the audience because they reveal
who's the killer in like the first 10 minutes.
Made by Rian Johnson. And honestly, it's like, okay, this is a guy who doesn't like, he has, again, contempt for the thing he's making. Like he thinks that he wants to make a movie like Clue, but he thinks Clue movies are stupid. So, you know, and he crafted one that was stupid. When you really like hold it up to the light, you're like, wait a minute, what? Like this isn't this doesn't work as a mystery at all. It's not. And he's like, yeah.
So because then it tells you, oh wait, no, we actually don't know who killed him. Like 3/4 after a long time where we're spent like thinking there's no mystery.
I haven't seen Knives Out, but I get the sense of Rian Johnson is just a guy that's just like too clever by half, or like trying too hard to be clever all the time and be smarter than the movie he's making.
Where he feels like, oh, again, with Last Jedi, like same kind of deal. Like,
which is a movie I half like, but then it just undercuts itself.
It's pretentious for no reason. Like, you know what I mean? Like, dude, like you're making a Star Wars movie, or you're making this like Clue, like what is it? Murder on the Orient Express style mystery. Like, if you don't want to make those movies, don't make them. You know, but he's like, I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna show you how dumb it is. But it's like, but in doing so, you're just making a dumb movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're making a movie that doesn't respect its own.
It's like the smart guy equivalent of an Asylum movie.
That's an apt analogy.
With better production.
But just because Asylum movies are like, look, it's good because it's bad, but it's just they just make bad movies and then tell you it should be funny because they're bad.
Yeah. It's very like, I don't know. Like, again, I don't like as a viewer, like I don't care. I'm past that. Like I feel like as we've transcended, we're like in this post sort of like there's a new sincerity now. Like I feel like that's like people are like responding.
Oh, 2023, we are being vulnerable as fuck.
Like just be sincere. Like we've done the cynical thing already. Like we've done that to the point where it's just like, okay, like all the movies are fucking cynical to the degree where it's like everything you see now, like
yeah.
We need
authenticity. Bring back, make America authentic.
I'm not against, like, to me, like, cynicism and irony are, well, cynicism's kind of a worldview thing, and irony is a mode of expression, but irony is not insincere necessarily. Right. Irony can be a way to express sincerely felt things.
Right.
And like, I'm in favor of cynicism in the sense of like a 70s movie or something is cynical.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean, like cynical from the perspective of, yeah, like having contempt for your audience and feeling above everything you're making.
That's not actually, it's not that they're making something with a cynical point of view. It's just the reasons behind them making it.
Yeah.
They're thinking they're making a big deconstruction of the genre.
Deconstructions need to go. The deconstructions are kind of boring, I think. And the things that people love and call deconstructions are either not really deconstructions or are interesting for other, like Evangelion isn't really a deconstruction and all the things that are good and interesting about it aren't related to that. It's like one example.
I feel like to wrap this up, I feel like because we got to a very certain point and I do want people to watch this movie. I don't want to go tell them everything that happens. So I feel like we should probably not go any further in the plot because I feel we got all the way up to like shit goes insane.
And it's we're right at the cusp of the climax.
So I would,
which is, it's a great climax. It's a worthy 80s action movie climax.
The final kind of duel is really great, and I love a protracted brawl where two guys.
Yeah, it's very protracted, and like you until think they're it's going to end several times, and it doesn't.
The moment that
but in a good way.
The moment where he shows up with the cat, the flamethrower, and the MC.
That is awesome.
God, that's a great entrance.
The cat meows.
Definitely for those who want to seek this movie out. And since I have a patron I'll probably like link it in the Patreon for Patreon.
I saw it. It's on rarefilm.com mm-hmm. or Rarelust. I think you can download it from there. But yeah, otherwise there's yeah. like you're not gonna find this movie on like 1, 2, 3 movies or whatever.
Searching. So yeah, I'll probably do that. So at this point in the podcast, guys, it was great having you guys on. This is the moment where I have my guests sort of plug away whatever they want to plug for themselves. So
oh yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It was a pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for turning us on to this movie, which was a real delight.
This movie rocked.
It's a great podcast, really fun.
Well.
And yeah, I mean, I started listening to your show after you invited us on. I think you've got a really good show, and I appreciate that you're out here. Oh, yeah, again, turning people on to movies that like they would never know about otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the goal of this is sort of like, it's not just film, but it's primarily film because just the industry that I've been on the margins of for so long, but like also just like things that are just interesting and art and creativity. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
You gotta have people talking about shit when we live in the era of Marvel. You have to, because
we can't Marvel is, let society just descend into nothing but talk about Marvel movies.
It's just kind of cringe to use this term or whatever, but it's for normies. So like, you know, it is that. It's pure normie, like
it's for the it's normie core.
I've started referring to them as gumps.
Gumps?
Yeah, you know, like Forrest Gump.
Okay, I was gonna ask, does it stand for anything? But
wait,
I mean, Forrest Gump was actually mentally disabled.
Yes, but in a way.
What? Yeah.
But it also refers to the kind of people that saw Forrest Gump and as thought it was like a brilliant movie.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Yeah, that's
when Shazam's love story is kind of like a Forrest Gump character, a little bit.
He is. Yeah, so yeah, a little bit. You know,
like he's just like finds himself in scenarios and situations. It's just like Forrest.
It's just like being there.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the,
it's exactly
the being
what this
there
movie's
of whooping
like.
Ass.
The being there of whooping ass and getting a pulling a nice girl.
And on that
note, being delinquenty.
I think that's a great book.
Yeah.
End this on. Thanks again, guys.
You're welcome.
As always, I do not know how to end podcasts, so this.
I guess we've already mentioned our podcast.
Yeah, go listen to our podcast, and you should also give us at least $3 a month on Patreon.
Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes for you guys too, for sure.
Subscribe. Yeah, we're gonna have our Batman Returns episode dropping soon.
Yeah, I've been doing that lately too. I've been like, and I might do that with this episode. I mean, I might like cut it in half and we like preview and then the whole episode on Patreon, because you know, I feel like why not, like I
save
like,
the goods save the
yeah,
goods
like, and it
behind
gives people
paywall.
An enticement, like enough of it to know if it's something they want more
if you're hearing this right now, thank you.
Yeah,
and thanks again, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank
you.
Have a great 2023, and it was an absolute pleasure. Yeah.
she not get the crystal. My shot cover, I took, I can't check aside. Yeah, she not give a high. Yeah, tryna get there to lie. Yeah, 2週間前から腹出てたら、しなかたくにかい。目で穴割りたい。俺はまだ high。Yeah, 自社目がまだない。Yeah, 自社目がまだない。Yeah, 上司が決めたい。Yeah, 誰もいたい。Yeah, 誰でも飛びたい。Yeah, 孤独でギーハー。目が覚めてもいい場所すら逃げ場所すらない。レゴレゴ湧くなくなってなんか止まらないからバイ。何終わるくない、レオ何終わるくない。ほれバタバタザムライハイタカルシコイ。バカなギャルを演じてたキャロチュナチュレカブキジョボスカミナミチュロクセカラそれ人騙して金儲け。ケミカルに踊れ救急車で送迎。精神をさまひょって応用しかポーサー。